ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
When energy costs jump, everyone feels it. At the Bowser, on the power bill, and across the economy.
I'm Alan Kohler.
And I'm Carrington Clark. On ABC Business Daily's Fuelcast, we break down the latest in fuel, energy, and the forces driving prices.
It's a quick, clear update on what's moving, why it matters, and what it can mean for your wallet and the wider economy.
Find Fuelcast in the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Julia Bergen. Welcome back to the Background Briefing studio.
Madison Knorton, it's good to be here.
So we are in week two now of In Search of the Missing Artist.
That's right, week number two.
And last time you were looking in Australia, you were looking in France, you couldn't find this internationally acclaimed French artist, Jean-Paul Monjean, anywhere.
Not a trace.
So you're still searching for him?
I am.
Okay, where to next?
We're going to Western Sydney, to a plastics factory. I've got my face pressed up against a small window, a bit like a child at the zoo, and I'm staring into the guts of this giant industrial oven. And that's when the timer goes off.
Yeah. That's the timer. Jim sets a timer. Yeah, I'll switch that off. Yeah.
I jump back and I make way for Jim, this Italian man wearing aviators. And he opens the door and removes a small sheet of yellow plastic. It's about the size of an A4 piece of paper.
Okay, so now this is hot.
The heat from the oven has made it really soft and pliable. Jim takes the sheet and puts it on a workbench, and a woman takes over.
And what I'm going to do is actually manipulate the material. And so at this stage, it's just like a piece of fabric, but it's hot.
She's wearing these thick cotton gloves. They're white. And she's using her hands to mould this plastic. She's pressing it in and out and back and in on itself and around itself, and she's sort of pulling it up and guiding it down, creating these hills and caverns and folds. And as she's doing this, I feel like I'm watching somebody knead bread, except at double speed.
It's still pliable, a little bit pliable, but it's already setting.
As the woman's working, Jim's coming in with a fan and he's sort of cooling bits of it as she finishes them. She's only got 2 minutes until the plastic goes hard. 2 minutes to make a piece of art, a brightly coloured plastic sculpture.
That kind of sounds like a Jean-Paul Monjean.
It does. The sculpture looks like a giant crumpled post-it note, just like Jean-Paul's works. But this is Anya Peche. She's an Australian artist and she's exhibited all over the world, including in France. She uses the same plastic materials as Jean-Paul and both make very similar sculptural output. But that's not all. Jean-Paul and Anya, they also shared a gallery, Studio Gallery Group.
Oh, so Anya worked with the gallerist, Kerry Armstrong.
That's right, she did.
And are they repped by this gallery at the same time?
No, they're not there at the same time. Anya predates Jean-Paul. She's exhibiting and selling her works for Studio Gallery Group for about 3 years. It's a good working relationship.
These works sold very well through Studio Gallery. We had a nice working relationship and it was profitable.
And then things turn sour with Kerry Armstrong.
When I sort of announced that I'd be leaving, she was quick to say, oh, well, you know, we have this artist who apparently has been lingering in the background. We've been wanting to show him, but of course we couldn't because of you.
Who is this artist? Is it Jean-Paul?
That's right, Jean-Paul Monjean. And with Anya gone, Studio Gallery Group opens its doors to him.
Yeah, milk. Do you have milk?
No, just black is good.
Yeah.
Thank you. He's delicious as you take.
Yeah. I'm back at Anya's house. We've sadly bid Jim farewell. And the two of us are sitting at her kitchen table, which is packed with quiche, lemon tart, documents, diaries, drawings, and a collection of her sculptures.
I always love visiting artists' houses because I feel like they're never boring.
No, it wasn't. And Anya's was like being in a mini art gallery. So the walls aligned with some of her bigger works.
We're looking at a sort of a round shape, call it oval, perhaps, slightly irregular.
She's and even got some of these sculptures in her bathroom, functioning as a bit of a decoy hand towel.
Decoy hand towel?
Yeah, it literally sits there next to the sink, like a hand towel.
Someone's described it as a roll of toilet paper unravelling in the wind, you know.
And then outside is a bigger piece.
It's a chunky piece, so it takes up space.
Could be sort of an ergonomic
chair. Yeah. Pepe will just lie there.
Anya's been developing this practice with plastic for over a decade.
I studied at National Art School, did my bachelor's, then honours and master's. And really this work arrived through painting, historically a sort of a painter. Anyway, I ended up coming into these artists who were working in the 1960s in Los Angeles, the Finnish fetish artists.
Sorry, did she say Finnish fetish artists? Is that as racy as it sounds?
Finnish fetish with two N's is pretty edgy stuff, but Finnish fetish with a single N, that's the art movement and it's a little less racy. It's all about using industrial processes to get a glossy, slick finish.
I started painting on transparent plastic sheeting and that was exciting and it prompted me to push it further, and if you sort of break the rules, that's when things start to happen.
And that's when Anya lands on the idea of making these smooth, shiny sculptures with industrial machines.
Through heat, it becomes this sort of a beautiful, opaque surface.
Anya is by no means the only artist working in this material, but she's developed her own practice over the years, and she walks me through it, from idea to finished product. And despite what I've seen in the plastics factory, where it takes less than 2 minutes to make a piece of finished art, I start to understand that there are many, many hours that go into her work.
I'm aiming for absolute perfection. I don't want to leave any mark of the hand, and yet made by hand, but no fingerprints, no struggle. I like to think they all look so easy and they just sit as they should.
We're talking clamps, ropes, pulley systems, wheels, ladders, and often one or two extra jimps to help manoeuvre these works, which are so large they need to be hung from the ceiling. Think cow carcass in an abattoir.
When you see the scale of the larger works, some of them are 3 metres, you know, it's a very bodily experience because I'm often under the material and over it. It's, you know, challenging.
I remember watching her and thinking she was performing a choreographed dance with her hands, and I could see she was quite protective of her creative process.
You come to something unique, what I think is interesting and unique, because you break new ground, and then the easiest thing is for someone else to copy it.
Fresh out of uni, Anya's picked up by a gallery in Sydney called M Contemporary. A couple of years later, she's noticed by Studio Gallery Group and they start showcasing her work too.
I understood that Studio Gallery were going to represent me, you know, in Victoria, given that I had my gallery here in Sydney.
So now she's contracted by 2 separate galleries, and for a while it all goes well, until it doesn't. You see, there's a small problem. Anya signed 2 contracts. And they completely contradict each other.
Oh, how so?
Well, on the one hand, she agrees that M Contemporary are the only ones who can sell her works in New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, she agrees that Studio Gallery Group can sell her works anywhere. So when her works start popping up in Sydney under the Studio Gallery Group banner, something they're well within their rights to do,
mm-hmm.
Anya's suddenly in breach of her other contract with M Contemporary.
So that's this one.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It's the 3rd paragraph down.
Mm.
Do you realise that you've signed 2 contracts that sort of say different things?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, look, I see that.
Were you aware at the time that that's what it said, or do you...
I may have overlooked it, you know. I see it, it's there, and I understand that.
Anya's put herself in a position where she has to choose. And so she decides to leave Studio Gallery Group.
Oh, wow.
And the way she does this is she calls gallerist Kerry Armstrong, lets her know that she's no longer going to be working with Studio Gallery Group. And it's in that same phone call, Anya says, that Kerry mentions Jean-Paul Maljean for the first time.
She explained to me that she'd always wanted to show him, but since I was with the gallery, she couldn't show his work.
And that's because Anya and Jean-Paul both work in a similar medium.
And with my parting, she was able to sort of take that opportunity and then introduce his work into the gallery.
So Anya is out and Jean-Paul is in.
Before my work even left the gallery, Jean-Paul Mangan's work started to appear.
And soon, the gallery and its online followers start talking about this new artist. It's the 12th of June, 2021, less than a month after Anya tells Kerry she's leaving Studio Gallery Group. And a post appears on Instagram. It's from another one of the gallery's artists, and it features one of her paintings, alongside a bright pastel orange sculpture, which she says is by, and I quote, Parisian sculpture artist Jean-Paul Maljean. The next day, the gallery follows suit with a post of its own and, you know, people are commenting that they want more information and Studio Gallery Group basically says Jean-Paul's very new, he's selling fast and we'll give you information as soon as we can.
And it was very confusing because as images were appearing on social media attributed to him, people were questioning, you know, customers and interested parties and artists, colleagues, friends, peers, you know, going, hey, look, you know, this work that looks similar, but it's not yours. What's going on?
The social posts keep coming, both from Studio Gallery Group's account and also from Kerry Armstrong's personal account, talking about that he's French, that he's working in Paris, and that's where his works are being shipped from.
So the gallery is really championing this artist. They're really pushing Jean-Paul on their socials.
That's right. But as this mysterious Frenchman's online profile is growing, so too is confusion inside and outside the gallery.
While my work was still in the gallery, other artists were still tagging my name to works that were appearing that were his.
The gallery staff are also getting confused. Remember Molly?
Yeah, that's the Melbourne art manager who you spoke to in the last episode.
Yeah, that's right. Well, when Jean-Paul Maljean's sculptures appear in the gallery, she's just started working there and she remembers not being able to tell whether Jean-Paul's work is Jean-Paul's or Anya's.
And at first when I saw them, I immediately thought that they were Anya Pesci's works. But I had been made aware that she had left the gallery on not so good terms. And at that point, they still had quite a few of her artworks in the gallery.
So Molly thinks Jean-Paul is Anya. And then later on, we have Abby, our gallery worker who speaks French, who thinks Anya is Jean-Paul.
I saw what I thought was Jean-Paul's artworks upstairs in the loft space. And so I went downstairs and I spoke to another team member and they told me, like, oh, that's Anya Pesci.
So they look similar, these pieces.
That's what they think. They're confused by what they see.
And what's Anya thinking amidst all of this?
Well, Anya's trying to untangle herself from Studio Gallery Group. But this confusion about her work and Jean-Paul's is making it hard. She's intrigued about this new artist because of the way she left the gallery.
Mm.
She wants to know more about Jean-Paul Maljean, but she doesn't ask Kerry directly. Instead, she enlists a friend to help, and this friend writes an email to Kerry Armstrong.
It states, "Hi Kerry."
The author doesn't say she's a friend of Anya's. She writes as though she's a prospective buyer.
As it is not possible to attend the gallery at present, I'm interested in understanding more about the work as I'm looking to make some decisions regarding interior decorating.
So that email then goes on to ask about the possibility of Jean-Paul creating a custom piece in a cool colour. And then it kind of pivots to questions about Jean-Paul's exhibition history, as well as his relationship to Studio Gallery Group.
I have investigated past exhibitions mentioned on your website, but cannot see this work represented in those exhibitions. Can you please advise the origins of this work and how long you have represented this artist? Appreciate your assistance with this inquiry. Best regards.
So Anya was sort of fishing for information.
Yeah, she was.
What does Kerry say back?
I have a copy of Kerry's email, and it's really good to have because it's the first insight into the gallery's decision to represent Jean-Paul. According to that email, the relationship goes back a couple of years.
Jean-Paul applied to work with us around 2 years ago.
This is not Kerry's real voice. She didn't want to take part in the podcast, so we're using an actor.
We saw a material similarity to one of our artists who was represented at that time by our Victorian galleries. So as much as we were extremely excited by the work and could see differences, out of professional loyalty, we couldn't consider his work, even for a different state.
Then Kerry explains.
The other artist, Anya Peche, is now represented exclusively by M Contemporary, so we are able to consider working freely with JP.
JP is Jean-Paul. And the email also introduces someone else, a manager.
With regards to Jean-Paul, I'm happy to chat to you directly. He is managed by Anthony Seymour, who's our main point of contact regarding shipments of work, etc.
Aside from that, Kerry's response doesn't reveal much more about Jean-Paul, except for a couple of lines at the very end of the email.
Jean-Paul personally shuns contact. He, I'm told, has trauma regarding an accident as a younger man. And whilst we have met Anthony, for now, the work will speak for Jean-Paul. We respect his wishes and we're just feeling very fortunate to represent him. And of course, the stunning works.
Trauma regarding an accident as a younger man. That's about the only new thing Anya learns from this email. Jean-Paul Maljean is a traumatised artist who won't face the world and that all communication needs to go through his manager. By this point, she's already made up her mind about what she wants to do next. Anya's brought in a lawyer. It's November 2021 when Anya's lawyer opens fire.
Our client is extremely concerned about the detrimental impact that Studio Gallery Group and Jean-Paul Maljean's conduct is having to her hard-earned reputation and her future career as an artist.
In that first letter, Anya makes a number of allegations, including copyright infringement.
I mean, that became a concern for me because as I'm leaving this work appears, it just felt like it was too close to my own work.
Anya believes Jean-Paul Maljean's work looks like hers. Same materials, colours, techniques. But just because two things look the same doesn't mean there's copyright infringement. Proving that is very complicated. And so when Anya's lawyer puts all this to Kerry, it comes with the caveat that she doesn't really want to go to court. She just wants answers to her questions. Namely, who is Jean-Paul Maljean?
We asked for documentation, like some sort of evidence-based information on the fact that he was, you know, a French artist, that he practices from France, evidence of paperwork regarding shipment of work.
She makes 7 requests in total. So she's asking for things like Jean-Paul Maljean's contact details, his qualifications, professional background, the terms of his contract with Studio Gallery Group, proof of the works being made and shipped from Paris to Australia.
Is there any truth to this? I mean, who is this artist? Show us, you know? And that's it. End of story. You know, that would be enough.
But the gallery sees things a little bit differently.
We were met with a very cool, aloof pause, like nothing.
I've seen the response from Kerry's lawyer and it basically says, no, we won't answer the questions about Jean-Paul and everything Anya says, there's nothing to it. They're empty claims.
Our clients wholly dispute that your client has any proper basis whatsoever for the allegations made in your letter.
When it comes to the alleged copyright infringement, the letter says,
none of the works your client complains about are any more than other examples or depictions of this genre, and they are clearly not reproductions or substantial reproductions of your client's artworks.
The letter goes on to demand an apology and says without one,
Kerry could take legal action of her own. It's enough to spook Anya.
That's unpleasant and nobody wants it, and it's, you know, expensive to say the least. And so I had to sort of sit on it for a while.
So what does Anya do? Does she give up?
Legally, yes, she doesn't pursue it any further, but it's not quite the end of it. For a while, not much happens, and then Anya gets a call from a journalist.
So it's now 2025, 4 years since Jean-Paul's works first started appearing. A journalist called Liz Hobday, who works at the Australian Associated Press, she gets a tip-off, which leads her to Anya. Mm. She interviews her and publishes. The story airs Anya's theory that, firstly, Jean-Paul's art is a rip-off of her own works. Mm. And secondly, that she doesn't buy Jean-Paul's story.
She doesn't believe it?
No.
Which part doesn't she believe?
She thinks Jean-Paul Maljean, the internationally acclaimed French artist, making his works from a studio in Paris, is a fiction.
Oh.
Liz, the journalist, puts all of this to the gallery and they dispute it, but they won't say anything on the record. They won't answer her questions. Instead, after the story is published, Studio Gallery Group sends AAP a letter. This time, it's from one of Australia's most aggressive defamation law firms, Giles George.
Right. Okay, so this gallery is not playing.
The gallery's not mucking around. Anya gets one too, as does an arts website that publishes their own version of the story.
So what happens to the story?
AAP stands by its reporting, and you can still read it today, but the threats do have an impact. That arts website, it pulls the story down and publishes an apology. But from there, the whole thing just kind of dies down. And Anya, she's back where she started.
I dig every day. I know others dig every day. And there are still no answers. And, you know, while I've had to pause in between those legal threats, I am proud of my practice and I know where I've come from. And it's sort of, I think, to have this happen to you questions all of that. And I'm determined to stand for it, you know? Sorry, I'm getting emotional.
So is this the end of things? Is there, like, any way to find out more about Jean-Paul?
It's not the end of things for me. Because up until now, the focus has been on finding the man. But I realise I also have his art. And unlike all the secrecy around Jean-Paul's identity, the one thing he is transparent about is the material he uses in his art. PMMA, polymethyl methacrylate. Big, flat sheets of plastic in all sorts of colours and finishes. And if I can find out where he's getting those materials from, it might take me one step closer to finding him. As we know, Jean-Paul's not the only artist who makes sculptures out of this material. There's quite a few, including Anya. So I decide it's time to head back to the plastics factory.
This is where it all started, the country.
This is what's available, but trains change all the time and they invent new shapes and new colours and different intensity of colour so you can get the light through or not light through, or gloss on one side, matte on the other side, all sorts of variations, you know.
I'm back in Western Sydney at the factory where Anya makes her art to talk plastic with someone who's been in the industry for over 50 years. His name is Rudy Ringer. He sourced materials, he's got on the tools, and now he runs this plastics fabrication company, which makes all sorts of things like medical equipment, food packaging, chutes, kitchen splashbacks, you name it. Rudy knows Anya because she occasionally leases a little corner of his factory to make her art. And he also sources her materials.
So some of it is frosty, some of it is mirror. And you can have that in gold and silver.
The walls of the warehouse are lined with hundreds of these flat sheets,
stocked on shelves, a bit like books in a library. And as I peruse through them, Rudy gives me the lay of the land of Australia's plastics industry.
They started making these materials during the Second World War before the aircraft windows.
A somewhat scenic route of plastic supply chains.
At that time, this plastic was new, and a lot of old shop fittings were made out of acrylic.
But all I'm really interested in is where they come from, specifically the high-quality coloured ones that artists use.
All right, so there's two suppliers. One of them is a German supplier, and the other one is from England.
Do you source them straight from overseas, or do you have local suppliers?
There's importers here. So the German material comes from a company called Plastrol.
Okay.
And the other one is in Melbourne. It's called Mitchell Plastics.
Plastrol and Mitchell Plastics. They're not the only Australian importers and suppliers, but they're the two main ones. The way it works, Rudy tells me, is a customer picks a colour and a finish, you know, transparent, matte, mirror, whatever it is. And then fabricators like him go direct to Plastrol in Sydney or Mitchell Plastics in Melbourne. It's possible that John Paul's doing the same thing. So I do too. I call them up.
Oh, hi there. My name's Julia Bergen. I'm a journalist with the ABC. How are you going? I'm doing a story on an artist called Jean-Paul Mangin who makes plastic art. I'm trying to get a better understanding of how and where his art is made. He's represented by Melbourne Gallery Studio Gallery Group. Have you ever supplied materials or done any fabrication work for him or the gallery?
What did they say?
I call Mitchell Plastics on four separate occasions. Each time I speak to a different staff member and they tell me exactly the same thing. But I keep calling back.
Oh, hi, it's Julia Bergen again, just from ABC. Sorry to call back so soon. I just wanted to double check I had it correct.
What are you hearing?
They tell me they don't have any orders placed by anyone called Jean-Paul Mangin. But in 2021, so about 4 months after that changeover period from Anya leaving and Jean-Paul starting, Mitchell Plastics has three separate dealings with Studio Gallery Group. Two orders and a third quote. The company didn't want to do an interview, but they confirm in those four separate phone calls that in September and October 2021, Studio Gallery Group orders over a dozen sheets of 3mm thick coloured plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first order in September is for 9 sheets of acrylic mirror and acrylic perspex.
Do you have the date of that original, that first transaction? 8th of September. 6 of the mirror, and those colours were gold, bronze, grey, orange, blue, and green. Okay.
All sized at 1.2 by 2.4 metres.
Mm-hmm.
And in the natural frost finish, so that's the acrylic perspex, the gallery purchases 1.5 metre by 2 metre sheets of what's called mineral grey, desert beige and candy blue. So these are all just the names of colours. A few weeks later, they get another quote.
Moonlight, purple, plum, green, and the blush pink. Is that the right one? Yeah. Okay, and that was a quote, so never transacted.
In October, they make another order. And this time, it's 2 sheets of gold mirror and 2 sheets of what's called moonlight and lime zest.
I mean, it begs the question, do these plastics show up anywhere in Jean-Paul's work?
I've gone back and cross-referenced social media posts of Jean-Paul's various pieces that appear after these purchases were made, and they seem to match.
Wow.
The colours seem to match, the finishes seem to match, the level of transparency. To be clear, we can't know for sure, but if that's true, that would suggest Jean-Paul did use these local materials and that he's not making his artworks in Paris.
So, okay, let me make sure I'm following this. While Studio Gallery Group is advertising on its social media that Jean-Paul's works are being shipped from Paris, they're also busy sourcing these plastic sheets that are likely used by the artist from a local supplier here in Australia?
Yeah, that's right.
So did you ask the gallery about this?
I did. I asked them explicitly if the materials they purchased had been used in the production of Jean-Paul Marjan's works, but they didn't give me any on-the-record response to that.
Hmm. Okay. So, Julia, where does this leave you on your hunt for Jean-Paul?
Well, at this point, there's a lot of questions that I still don't have the answers to. But for me, it's becoming increasingly clear that Studio Gallery Group does seem to have some of those answers. You know, they're talking to his manager, this guy called Anthony Seymour, who I can't find anything on.
Mm.
They're purchasing materials. And they seem to be lawyering up any time there's any questions raised about the identity of Jean-Paul Marjan.
Mm.
I figure I need to turn my attention on them, on the gallery and its directors.
This is Kerry and Michael.
That's right. Kerry Armstrong and her husband, Michael Armstrong. I want to know who they are. And I want to know what their relationship is with Jean-Paul Marjan. I've just pulled up to the cemetery and I'm the only one here. We've got row after row of gravestones in very neat straight lines. Each one's got a bouquet of flowers, fake flowers. So we're after section S, plot 64. Let's have a look. Kid Goonan Walker. And here it is.
That's next time on In Search of the Missing Artist.
Both Studio Gallery Group directors, Kerry and Michael Armstrong, said no to an interview. Instead, they issued two separate statements via their lawyer. In the first one, they said, Studio Gallery Group categorically rejects the premise, tone, and methods of Background Briefing's investigation, which reflects a sustained and harmful campaign against one of its artists. Jean-Paul Marjan is the nom de plume of a real artist, a long-established and protected artistic practice. Despite being put on notice of serious psychological harm to this artist, efforts to unmask this individual have continued, raising grave concerns about privacy, safety, and ethical responsibility. There is no legitimate public interest in exposing the identity of an artist whose work is lawfully created and sold, and whose anonymity is protected for legitimate reasons. Studio Gallery Group will respect its contractual obligations to its artists. What is now at issue is not art, but responsible journalistic practice. In a second statement, they also said, Studio Gallery is responsible for marketing of the artists they represent. Studio Gallery has audited its current marketing material relating to Jean-Paul Marjan and have no concerns. Jean-Paul Marjan continues to be an extremely popular artist whose works are and will continue to be cherished by collectors. We respect the right of this artist and, in fact, all creators to use nom de plumes. We also put questions to Jean-Paul Marjan via Studio Gallery Group. He didn't respond.
Background Briefing sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Simon Branthwaite. Music composition by Hamish Camilleri. Fact-checking by Justine Landis-Hanley. Our rollout producer is Ben Sveen. The supervising producer is Max Chalmers. And the executive producer is Fanu Falali. The reporter on this story is Julia Bergen, and I'm Madison Connaughton. To hear more episodes, search for the Background Briefing podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks for listening.